Millions of Muslims around the globe mourn on Ashura, commemorating the historic Battle of Karbala and its message of resistance against injustice and tyranny. Iran says a final agreement on reviving the 2015 nuclear deal must meet the country's interests and guarantee enduring and effective removal of sanctions. And Russia says it is suspending U.S. on-site inspections under the new START arms control treaty, adding it remains committed to all provisions of the pact. Thank you for joining us. Top story this hour, Iranians have also been holding mourning rituals on Ashura in commemoration of the historic Battle of Karbala and its message of resistance against injustice and tyranny. Every year, black-clad mourners mark the occasion with processions or ceremonies to show their grief over the sufferings of Imam Hussein and his companions. Many also converge on religious centers such as mosques to commemorate the event. The rituals involve mourners beating on their chests and reciting eulogies in honor of Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. Ashura is the 10th day of the Muslim calendar month of Muharram. It is the day when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq. They were killed by forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid, in the Battle of Karbala in 680 AD.
Muslims beating on their chests and shedding tears for a man who was killed some 14 centuries ago. But his heart-wrenching martyrdom continues to touch the hearts of his followers. He is Imam Hussein, the third Shia Imam. On the day of Ashura, which is the 10th and final day of the annual 10-day mourning rituals, Iranians from all walks of life took part in mass processions across the country to honor Imam Hussein.
Still after 14 centuries, we see that people from any religious and ethnic background participate in Imam Hussein's martyrdom anniversary. This is because the lessons of Ashura transcend Imam Hussein's time and place, since they're about moral and ethical virtues.
Imam Hussein is a symbol of freedom seeking for all of us, no matter if we are Muslims or non-Muslims. He fought for righteousness and he sacrificed his life and household on this path.
Imam Hussein was the grandson of Prophet Muhammad. He was killed along with his 72 companions in a battle against the forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid ibn Muawiyah, on the plains of modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala. The Karbala tragedy was sparked after Imam Hussein refused to pay allegiance to Yazid, for he believed that the caliph did not practice true Islam, as taught by the Prophet.
Yazid didn't deserve to rule over Islamic territories since he didn't adhere to Islamic virtues. He was corrupt and cruel, and this is why Imam Hussein didn't pay allegiance to him. In fact, we owe our identity as Muslims to our third Imam.
And this ideology has for centuries been passed on to new generations through such mourning rituals. Here, kids will learn about what Imam Hussein stood for.
I love Imam Hussein. He fought the bad people of his time. So we learn from him that we should never surrender to the bullies.
These people say Imam Hussein's sacrifices saved Islam from distortion and manipulation by Yazid. And this is just one reason why his love never dies down in the hearts of Muslims after 14 centuries. Ashura is the climax of commemoration ceremonies for Imam Hussein. But there's a famous saying among Muslims that goes, every day is Ashura. And this encourages Muslims to live the legacy of Imam Hussein every day in their lives, believing that the messages of Karbala should never be forgotten.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In Sana'a, thousands of Yemenis have gathered to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of the third Shia Imam and his companions. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from the Yemeni capital.
Yemenis from all walks of life flocked to the street of Yemen's capital Sana'a to commemorate the third Imam of Shia Muslims, Imam Hussein. He was martyred on Ashura, the 10th day of the lunar month of Muharram.
We went out as Yemenis to commemorate the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, who inspired patience and steadfastness in us in the face of the forces of global arrogance. We are in a battle with thousands of people like Yazid and even worse than him, including America and Israel. They attacked the Yemenis people and the Palestinian people. They are still killing our women and children. So this memory gives us hope that the values we learned from Imam Hussein will make us live generously and win at the end of the battle.
Imam Hussein, protesters said, is still alive because of his immortalized values and beliefs, which reject the oppression and corruption that Yemenis are currently experiencing. They further said Imam Hussein was the symbol of revolution and tenacity, who motivated Yemenis to resist the Saudi-led attack on their country.
This day is very important to us as we consider Ashura part of our identity. We are with Imam Hussein with our souls. Ashura this year coincides with the battle with the Zionist enemy, so the nation will follow the path of Imam Hussein in his jihad until the liberation of all occupied lands, especially occupied Al-Quds, and Yemen has come a long way towards freedom and independence.
After refusing to pledge alliance to the tyrant of that day, Yazid, in 680 AD, Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions and family members were killed during the Battle of Karbala.
People, he believed that Yemen has become a modern-day Karbala with the Saudi-led coalition killing people, displacing civilians, and enforcing a siege on the country. People, he are confident that Yemen's fight against the enemy will ultimately lead to victory. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Like every other Muslim nation in the world, Afghans passionately mark the 10-day mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Tasua, which falls on the 9th of Muharram and is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abul Fazl al-Abbas, drew hundreds of mourners to one of Kabul's old shrines. Attendees listened to clerics' speeches regarding the Battle of Karbala and beat on their chests.
This year, we are marking Muharram rituals under the rule of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. However, our processions are more crowded, passionate, and prosperous than previous ones. You know that Muharram is not only related to Shias, so we have our Sunni brothers taking part in ceremonies and services shoulder to shoulder with Shias.
We Afghan girls share the grief of Karbala tragedies with Zainab, Imam Ali's daughter. We are all sorrowful on this day and remember the suffering and bravery of our role model, Hazrat Zainab. Today, we live under the flag and our hijab shows that we are her firm followers.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims shut their businesses and take a day off to pay tribute to Karbala martyrs. They say prayers and hold charity events. This year, despite security threats, they took part in mass mourning ceremonies alongside Taliban officials.
Today is the martyrdom anniversary of great and respected Islamic figure and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. I offer my condolences to you and all Muslims. Undoubtedly, Imam Hussein sacrificed his life to save Islam. We, the people of Afghanistan, followed Imam Hussein's path through fighting against invasion, arrogance, and oppression. May Allah keep the love of Imam Hussein alive in the hearts of all of us.
Ashura is significantly important in Islamic calendar. Ashura and Imam Hussein's school of thought teaches freedom, bravery, resistance, and Islamic unity. This righteous path will last until doomsday. We Muslims globally are obliged to announce and spread the message of Ashura to all Muslim and non-Muslim people, especially youths.
The commemoration comes as Shia Afghans have been repeatedly targeted in places of worship and schools by terrorist groups, only because of their ethnicity and beliefs. On the 7th and 8th of Muharram this year, two bomb explosions killed and injured more than 30 Shia mourners. Afghanistan has witnessed different social and political changes over the course of centuries. Against the odds, Shia Muslims have been steadfast in remembering the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of mourners march through various streets wearing black and reciting elegies in honor of Imam Hussein, who, along with dozens of his household members and loyal companions, were martyred in Karbala in present-day Iraq.
The marchers here said this is a time for sorrow and self-reflection when one commits himself completely to the mourning. They said the mourning and the reflection of the tragic events at Karbala are intended to connect to the suffering and martyrdom of Imam Hussein.
This very day marked 10th of Muharram is the day of sadness, is the day of agony, is the day of shedding tears to all Muslims. And the reason is that in the field of Karbala, Imam Hussein was being mercilessly killed by Umayyad leaders.
The mourners also engaged in chest beating as the procession moved around the town in the hot tropical sun. The mourners said Ashura not only signifies intense grief for Imam Hussein, but is also a motivation for resistance against injustice in the world.
Imam Hussein has submitted his life entirely in order to save Islam. And that is what Malin Ibrahim Zakzaki Hafizahullah is calling for, that the entire Muslim and even non-Muslim, even Christian, let us gather together to fight oppressors, let humanity and then justice be in our nation.
Many of the mourners said they will continue this struggle to resist injustice because, as the well-known phrase goes, every day is Ashura and every land is Karbala. Danjum Abdullahi, Suleja.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1,400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam represents all of the martyrs in all the world throughout human history and planetary geography.
For me, he represents justice, bravery, and sacrifice.
His story is an example to mankind. As he stood against oppression and injustices.
And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Porza, London.
Moving on to other news, Iran says a final agreement in the talks to restore the 2015 nuclear deal must guarantee the rise of the country, as well as the enduring and effective removal of sanctions. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks in a phone call with EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell after the latest round of talks in Vienna. The top Iranian diplomat said Tehran has relayed its views and considerations about EU proposals to resolve outstanding issues. Amir Abdollahian pointed to Iran's constructive initiatives in the talks and underscored its seriousness and determination to achieve a deal. He called on the other sides, the US in particular, to adopt a realistic approach and refrain from unconstructive stances to pave the way to an agreement. Borrell, for his part, assessed the recent Vienna talks as positive, saying the relative progress was made. Earlier, Russia's envoy to the talks said the participants now need to decide if the text submitted by the EU is acceptable.
The EU coordinator circulated the final text of the draft decision on restoration of the JCPOA. The participants in the Vienna talks now need to decide if the draft is acceptable for them. In case of no objection, the nuclear deal will be restored.
The US also says it is ready to quickly conclude a deal based on the EU's proposal. Iran says it is too early to talk about a final text and nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. The nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA, was derailed after the US unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Indirect talks have been ongoing in Vienna since April last year for the readmission of the US to the deal and its restoration. Iran's foreign minister has hailed the resistance of the Palestinian people against the recent Israeli aggression. Hossein Amir Abdollahian says the killing of women and children represents the regime's desperation and weakness. Amir Abdollahian said that Israel's accepting a ceasefire on Palestinians' terms within 2 days was a great achievement for the resistance. He made the remarks in a phone call with Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh. Meanwhile, Haniyeh underlined that the recent victory is the beginning of a new chapter in confrontations with Israel. He said the resistance front is determined to continue its battle. The ceasefire followed a three-day Israeli war on the Gaza Strip. 45 Palestinians, including 15 children, were killed and some 360 others wounded in the Israeli onslaught this week on the besieged Palestinian territory. Russia says it is temporarily suspending inspections of its weapons under the New START treaty with the United States. The foreign ministry says Moscow has informed about its decision to Washington. It says the move is against, quote, U.S.'s persistent desire to implicitly restart inspections on conditions that do not take into account existing realities, the ministry said. However, that Moscow remains committed to all provisions of the new treaty. New START is the last remaining arms reduction pact between the two, limiting the deployment of nuclear warheads, missiles and bombers. It also allows sweeping on-site inspections. Recently, US President Joe Biden called on Russia to hold talks on a deal to replace the existing treaty once it expires in 2026. Russia expressed its readiness but said the basis should be mutual respect and mutual concerns. The United States is set to dispatch $1 billion in fresh military aid for Ukraine to help the country fight Russia. Colin Kyle, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, made the announcement at the Pentagon briefing. The package is one of the largest so far and includes additional precision HIMARS missile systems as well as rockets and armored medical transport vehicles. Recently, Kiev requested Washington to supply it with more ammunition for HIMARS, claiming the system had helped Ukrainian troops attack Russian forces behind the front lines. The U.S. has given approximately $9.8 billion in aid to Ukraine since Russia launched its military offensive there on February the 24th. The Pentagon also recently announced Ukrainians would be allowed to receive medical treatment at a U.S. military hospital in Germany. Well, those were the top stories for this hour. Thanks for joining us.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Dr. Luke Kemp, a climate scientist at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, says there are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at most modest levels of warming. Dr. Luke Kemp added, climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history. We now present you an article written by Damien Carrington. The piece is titled Climate Endgame, Risk of Human Extinction Dangerously Underexplored. Climate scientists have warned in an analysis the risk of global societal collapse or human extinction has been dangerously underexplored. They call such a catastrophe the climate endgame. They said, though, it had a small chance of occurring given the uncertainties in future emissions and the climate system, cataclysmic scenarios could not be ruled out. The scientists said, facing a future of accelerating climate change while blind to worst-case scenarios is naive risk management at best and fatally foolish at worst, adding that there were ample reasons to suspect global heating could result in an apocalyptic disaster. The international team of experts argue the world needs to start preparing for the possibility of the climate endgame. They said analysing the mechanisms for these extreme consequences could help galvanise action, improve resilience, and inform policy. The researchers said explorations in the 1980s of the nuclear winter that would follow a nuclear war spurred public concern and disarmament efforts. The analysis proposes a research agenda, including what they call the four horsemen of the climate endgame: famine, extreme weather, war, and disease. They also called for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, to produce a special report on the issue. They said the IPCC report on the impacts of just 1.5 degrees Celsius of heating drove a groundswell of public concern. Dr. Luke Kemp at the University of Cambridge's Centre for the Study of Existential Risk, who led the analysis, says, there are plenty of reasons to believe climate change could become catastrophic, even at modest levels of warming. Climate change has played a role in every mass extinction event. It has helped fell empires and shaped history. Dr. Luke Kemp added, past disasters are not limited to the direct impacts of high temperatures, such as extreme weather events. Knock-on effects such as financial crises, conflict and new disease outbreaks could trigger other calamities. The analysis is published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and was reviewed by a dozen scientists. It argues that the consequences of global heating beyond 3 degrees Celsius have been under-examined, with few quantitative estimates of the total impacts. Dr. Luke Kemp said, we know least about the scenarios that matter most. The scientist said a thorough risk assessment would consider how risks spread, interacted and amplified, but had not been attempted. They said, yet this is how risk unfolds in the real world. For example, a cyclone destroys electrical infrastructure, leaving a population vulnerable to an ensuing deadly heat wave. The COVID pandemic underlined the need to examine rare but high-impact global risks. Particularly concerning are tipping points where a small rise in global temperature results in a big change in the climate, such as huge carbon emissions from an Amazon rainforest suffering major droughts and fires. They said tipping points could trigger others in a cascade, and some remained little studied, such as an abrupt loss of stratocumulus cloud decks, that could cause an additional 8 degrees Celsius of global warming. The researchers warned that climate breakdown could exacerbate or trigger other catastrophic risks such as international wars or infectious disease pandemics, and worsen existing vulnerabilities such as poverty, crop failures and lack of water. The analysis suggests superpowers may one day fight over geoengineering plans to reflect sunlight or the right to emit carbon. The scientists said there is a striking overlap between currently vulnerable states and future areas of extreme warming. If current political fragility does not improve significantly in the coming decades, then a belt of instability with potentially serious ramifications could occur. There were further good reasons to be concerned about the potential of a global climate catastrophe. The scientists said, there are warnings from history. Climate change has played a role in the collapse or transformation of numerous previous societies and in each of the 5 mass extinction events in Earth's history. New modelling in the analysis shows that extreme heat, defined as an annual average temperature of more than 29 degrees Celsius, could affect 2 billion people by 2070 if carbon emissions continued. Qi Hu at Nanjing University in China, who was part of the team, said such temperatures currently affect around 30 million people in the Sahara and in the Gulf Coast, adding, by 2070, these temperatures and the social and political consequences will directly affect 2 nuclear powers and 7 maximum containment laboratories housing the most dangerous pathogens. There is serious potential for disastrous knock-on effects. The current trend of greenhouse gas emissions would cause a rise of 2.1 degrees Celsius to 3.9 degrees Celsius by 2100. But if existing pledges of action are fully implemented, the range would be 1.9 degrees to 3 degrees Celsius. Achieving all long-term targets set to date would mean 1.7 degrees Celsius to 2.6 degrees Celsius of warming. The scientists said even these optimistic assumptions lead to dangerous Earth system trajectories. They said temperatures more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels had not been sustained on Earth for more than 2.6 million years, far before the rise of human civilization, which had risen in a narrow climatic envelope over the past 10,000 years. Professor John Rockström at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research in Germany says, "The more we learn about how our planet functions, the greater the reason for concern. We increasingly understand that our planet is a more sophisticated and fragile organism. We must do the maths of disaster in order to avoid it."
Food for thought. Salam and our heartfelt condolences to all on the fateful day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein, peace upon him, while glancing over the army of Yazid in Karbala and seeing Umar ibn Sa'd ordering his forces to attack him, had said, "This day Allah has permitted us to engage in jihad, and He shall reward us for our martyrdom. So prepare yourself to fight against the enemies of Islam with patience and resistance. O sons of the noble and self-respected persons, be patient, for death is nothing but the bridge which you must cross after facing trials and tribulations so as to reach heavens and its joys. Which of you do not like to go from this prison of the world to the lofty palaces of paradise?
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the sacrifices that the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. And today we're going to talk about the sacrifices that the Imam presented to establish a life of honor in Islam. Before anything, I would like to send my sincere condolences for the arrival of the month of Muharram. I would like to send my heartfelt condolences for the commemoration of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, the examples of sacrifices that the Imam Al-Hussein presented to establish a life of honor in Islam are really astonishing and astounding, because the intellects of the people of the world were shaken by it and it felt a deep imprint on their hearts. So even those who were slightly perceptive were also affected by it. The most important matter that makes the Imam unique in this is incomparable steadfastness that he displayed in front of terrible events, because the Imam was armed with a limited patience in such a way that the historians say the crushing powers that were continuously moving towards the Imam were welcomed by him with absolute submission to God's will, in such a way that no kind of weakness or, you know, like cowardice was seen in it. And whenever tragedy's testing patience descended upon him, his lips used to open, and with deep faith, which was the most prominent quality of his personality, he used to say. Now, this is just among the examples that we're talking about, example of the sacrifice that the Imam did in a way, in such a manner that it presented him, it made him to establish a life of honor. He remained respected up to today.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we're talking about the sacrifices that the Imam presented, the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. What made him to stand up to today's Islam, up to today? It's something that took place long time ago in the history of Islam, but up to today it's respected. Up to today people are hearing about Hussein. People are respecting Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What are the main reasons? What are the sacrifices that this particular personality, a prominent personality, made? Now, Al-Imam Hussein is reported to have said, "Being in the sight of Almighty Allah has made it easy for us to bear what is befalling us." The wazirs expressing that the faith was that very secret of miracle and eternality in the mission of Hussein, which is a lofty example that leaves a school for generations to show them a way and increase its bestowals. So, what are we learning from the words of Al-Imam Hussein? That Al-Imam Hussein say that he is in the sight of the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that is what has made him to stand against all the challenges he was facing at the times. The challenges of the tyrant rulers, the challenges of the oppression that was realized or it was felt from the tyrant rulers. And this is what me and you, and we as the followers of Ahlul Bayt, should be doing. We should stand with Allah. We should stay with Allah. We should make Allah be our shield against all the challenges that we're facing in life, against anything that is coming against us in life. And that way, we are going to live the life of Ahlul Bayt, and we are definitely going to be successful and fight against any challenges that are facing us. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, I will see you fi amanillah. Until next episode, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Azmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day, since the menu largely includes local flavors.
visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Many people develop deeper relationships with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemasia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on, from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. The chest fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on a peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chessboard on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. For the first time in nearly 100 years of history, the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington city officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes, the balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors games, amusement rides and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2,000 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the first Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons. Living through a pandemic is strange as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues. But he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to 4 people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across 4 European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of 4. So Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year.
This is IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The scars of the U.S. invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan are deep, spanning decades. We will never know how many millions were killed or injured. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written jointly by Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan Writers. This article is published under the heading "The Other Victims of U.S. Burns Pitts War, the Iraqi and Afghan People." Stay tuned for more. Military veterans and their supporters camped out in front of the U.S. Capitol for close to a week after Republican senators withdrew their support for a major expansion of health care for veterans exposed to toxic burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. Formerly titled the Sergeant First Class Heath Robinson Honoring Our Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act of 2022, the PACT Act targets the Pentagon's reliance on burn pits for disposing of the vast amounts of waste produced during the invasions and occupations of Iraq and Afghanistan. Plumes of polluted smoke and particulates from the burn pits injured up to an estimated 3.5 million U.S. service members over the past two decades. After blocking the bill, Senate Republicans faced withering criticism from veterans and their supporters, including renowned comedian Jon Stewart. "I'm not sure I've ever seen a situation where people who have already given so much had to fight so hard to get so little," said Stewart, deadly, serious, flanked by vets and families of veterans who died from the exposure. Earlier, Stuart assailed the Republicans. Ain't this America heroes who fought in our wars outside, sweating with oxygen, battling all kinds of ailments, while these people sit in their air conditioning, walled off from any of it. They don't have to hear it. They don't have to see it, he said. Stuart wept after the Senate finally passed the bill. Burn pits were used to dispose of everything from trash, tires, paint, and other volatile organic solvents, batteries, unexploded ordnance, petroleum products, plastics, and medical waste, including body parts. These constantly burning dumps were often sited adjacent to barracks. Little or no protective gear was provided for impacted soldiers. Purdue University anthropology professor Kaylee Rubai said on Democracy Now! NewsHour, burn pits are massive incineration fields, sometimes as big as football fields, but there were many smaller ones throughout Iraq and Afghanistan as well. The Department of Veterans Affairs has identified a slew of cancers related to burn pit exposure, along with skin problems, asthma, bronchitis, respiratory, pulmonary, and cardiovascular problems, migraines, and other neurological conditions. These illnesses could have been prevented. The military typically used jet or diesel fuel to burn everything, creating far more pollution than high-temperature incinerators. But using incinerators would have cost more money. Waste disposal was handled by the military contractor Kellogg, Brown & Root, or KBR, a subsidiary of Halliburton. Halliburton's CEO prior to 2001 was Dick Cheney. Cheney then became U.S. vice president and was a key architect of the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. KBR received no-bid contracts to handle an array of logistics for the wars, including waste disposal. KBR chose cheap and dirty burn pits, maximizing profits. War is a racket, retired U.S. Marine Major General Smelly Butler wrote in 1935. Butler was a career Marine, admitting in a 1931 speech, "I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street and the bankers," Butler said. "I am a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism." The close to $700 billion appropriated in the PACT Act for the next 10 years will help alleviate some suffering caused by Halliburton's war profiteering, but only for U.S. victims. It won't do a thing for the people in Iraq and Afghanistan. Veterans saw acute short-term exposure to burn pits at peak health at the prime of their lives. Kaylee Rubai, who recently returned,